Good morning and welcome to the Monday edition of Times the Brief. I'm Harvey Kojan and these are the top stories of the day. 13 Foods That Could Be Affecting Your Sleep by Ariel Wegg. Skip the cup of coffee or the nighttime sleep aid and try one of these foods instead for a natural way to wake up or settle down. It's a strange phenomenon that you can pour yourself a glass of red wine at dinner and somehow find yourself falling asleep on the couch by 8 p.m. The foods we consume are crucial to our daily functioning and in the same way can affect how alert and awake we are for the morning meeting and how quickly we fall asleep at bedtime. If you're looking to swap out your daily cup of joe or fall asleep without hours of tossing and turning, try one of these sleep-affecting foods in your daily routine. Number 1. Hot sauce. Adding hot sauce to your meal may mess with your sleep. The spicy stuff can keep you awake and increase your body temperature at bedtime, making it harder to fall asleep. Number 2. Soy. Snack on edamame, make a tofu stir-fry for dinner, or warm up a steamy bowl of miso soup for some extra magnesium. The mineral helps relax muscles and makes it easier to catch some Z's. Number 3. Avocados. If you needed another reason to love avocados, their high amounts of unsaturated fat can increase your serotonin levels, the chemical that stimulates the part of your brain that induces sleep. They're also high in magnesium, which can help you hit the hay. Number 4. Hummus. Chickpea hummus is high in the amino acid tryptophan, the chemical that can help you fall asleep normally. The versatile beans are also high in folate, which helps regulate sleeping, and vitamin B6, which helps regulate your internal clock. If that's not enough to get you munching your way to shut-eye, the creamy dip is also high in the muscle-relaxing mineral magnesium. Number 5. Dark chocolate. Snagging a milk chocolate bar instead of coffee will definitely give you a sugar high and a caffeine-like buzz, but dark chocolate can have the opposite effect. Dark chocolate contains serotonin, which may cause you to nod off. Number 6. Red wine. It always seems a little odd that a glass of red wine can make you doze off, but it actually comes from the skin of the grapes. Melatonin, the sleep-inducing hormone we naturally produce, is found in most skin-on grape-related foods. But beware of the sleepy side effect. Alcohol is known to make you tired, but will later prevent your body from reaching the deep sleep it deserves. Number 7. Apples. An apple a day may keep the doctor away, but it can also help keep you awake. Apples are packed with vitamins, antioxidants, fiber, natural sugar, and phytonutrients that help you feel more alert. The sugar is slowly released in the body, keeping you alert without the coffee crash later on. Number 8. Peppermint. This herb is perfect for increasing productivity, helping you feel focused and staying awake during long days. But what really counts here is the scent of peppermint. So sip on a cup of tea, chew sugar-free peppermint gum, or keep a few peppermint candies in your bag for a pick-me-up. Number 9. Rosemary. Sprinkle this herb over your eggs in the morning for a wake-up call. The smell is known to increase brain activity and increase your body's energy to help you perform better throughout the day. Number 10. Banana. The combination of potassium and magnesium help relax your body and trigger those sleepy symptoms. You can also enjoy that banana before bed for some extra tryptophan, which will knock you out in about an hour, and vitamin B6, which has been linked to a better night's sleep. Number 11. Cherries. The number one food to induce sleep is none other than cherries. The fruit is naturally high in the sleep-inducing hormone melatonin and has been linked to catching some quality shut-eye. There's so much melatonin in these bad boys that tart cherry juice has been known to cure insomnia. Number 12. Fish. Similar to your Thanksgiving Day tryptophan-induced nap, other lean proteins like fish contain high amounts of the sleepy substance. Some varieties, like salmon, tuna, and snapper, also have vitamin B6, which helps in the production of melatonin. Number 13. Nuts. Most nuts provide a healthy source of calcium and unsaturated fats, which help improve serotonin levels. If you need a little extra, almonds have high amounts of magnesium that promote relaxed muscles and sleepy feelings, while Brazil nuts are high in selenium, helping you sleep soundly. President Trump thinks the Senate health care bill is mean, but he still supports it. By Alana Abramson. President Donald Trump confirmed Sunday that he had characterized the Senate's version of the Obamacare repeal bill as mean, but gave no indication that that will lessen his support of the legislation. Trump made the admission during a Fox News interview when he fielded a question about former President Barack Obama's response to the bill. Obama insisted that small tweaks over the course of the next couple of weeks, under the guise of making these bills easier to stomach, cannot change the fundamental meanness at the core of this legislation. He used my term, mean. That was my term because I want to see, and I speak from the heart, that's what I want to see. I want to see a bill with heart, Trump told Fox News's Pete Hegseth. Earlier this month, CNN reported that Trump had called the Senate bill mean in a luncheon with Republican senators and said the House's version of the bill did not provide enough protection for individuals. House Speaker Paul Ryan downplayed Trump's response, telling Fox News it was some kind of misinterpretation of a private meeting. The Congressional Budget Office, which offers nonpartisan analysis, estimated that under the House version of the health care bill, 23 million fewer Americans would have health insurance by 2026, largely due to shrinking Medicaid eligibility. The CBO is slated to release its analysis of the Senate bill this coming week. But like the House version, the Senate's bill also aims to phase out the portion of Obamacare that provides federal funding for states to expand Medicaid. A month before he officially launched his bid for president, Trump tweeted that he would not touch the Medicaid program. I was the first and only potential GOP candidate to state there will be no cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Huckabee copied me, Trump tweeted. But in his interview on Sunday, Trump seemed confident in the contents of the Senate's bill as well as its passage, though he predicted some changes to placate the senators that are currently not supporting the legislation. We have a very good plan, he said. We have a few people that are, I think you could say modestly, they're not standing on the rooftops and screaming. They want to get some points. I think they'll get some points. The Oxford English Dictionary just added woke. It's older than you might think. By Katie Steinmetz. Slang is almost always older than you think. English speakers have been calling stylish people fly since at least 1953. Though it's everywhere now, the first known use of OMG goes back to 1917, and the Oxford English Dictionary's latest update shows that the same is true of woke. The term, which has spread virally in recent years after being embraced by the Black Lives Matter movement, has been used to describe those who are aware since the early 1960s. Here's how the OED defines it. Woke, adjective, originally well-informed, up-to-date, now chiefly alert to racial or social discrimination and injustice, frequently in stay woke. The OED added that word, along with scores of others, in its quarterly update this June. Before editors add any word, they dig to find the earliest examples they can of it being used. Long before the word woke had anything to do with issues of inequality, some were using it to simply mean awake, says Catherine Martin, head of Oxford's U.S. dictionaries. She gives the example of an event held in Harlem in the 1920s, which ran from 5 p.m. to 5 a.m. called the Stay Woke Ball. By the 1960s, people had begun using the word to signal a more figurative sense of being awakened, referring to those who are aware or well-informed. Also added in this OED update is a new use of the word thing, as in, is that even a thing? And the first usage that editors could find in published work was in an episode of screenwriter Aaron Sorkin's Washington, D.C.-based drama West Wing. The OED defines this usage as a genuine or established phenomenon or practice, and in the show, one of the characters expresses surprise about leaf peeping being such a thing. The episode aired in the year 2000. According to the OED update, English speakers have been using the phrase "son of a bachelor" to express contempt without cursing since the 1600s. They've been dismissing experts in the study of insects as bug chasers since 1889, and they've been jokingly referring to sperm as swimmers since the 1980s. Here's a selection of words that the OED is adding in this latest batch. Boston marriage, noun, used euphemistically to refer to the cohabitation of two women, especially in a romantic relationship or intimate friendship. Bug chaser, noun, a person who studies or collects insects or other bugs, an entomologist, often somewhat depreciative. Come to Jesus, adjective, of a meeting, discussion, encounter, etc., that results or is intended to result in a significant shift in the current way of thinking about or doing something. Post-truth, adjective, relating to or denoting circumstances in which objective facts are less influential in shaping political debate or public opinion than appeals to emotion and personal belief. Son of a bachelor, noun, used as a term of abuse or contempt. Swimmer, noun, a sperm. Thing, noun, a genuine or established phenomenon or practice, typically somewhat depreciative, often in questions conveying surprise or incredulity. Unclick, verb, on a computerized form or menu, to deselect. Uptalk, verb, to utter declarative statements with a rising intonation at the end, a speech pattern more typically associated with questions. 6 Tips to Reduce Your Daily Stress and Anxiety by Daniel Keating. Keating, a professor of psychology at the University of Michigan, is the author of Born Anxious: The Lifelong Impact of Early Life Adversity and How to Break the Cycle. There are two major reasons that for several decades more Americans become stressed, agitated, and anxious, which in turn increases their daily physical stress, which itself in turn has led to the ongoing decades-long epidemic in stress-related disorders and diseases. The first reason is societal. As inequality rises, so do our fears about affording basic necessities, or, if we're relatively well off, about losing social standing and financial security for ourselves or our children. The second reason is more personal. Many more of us suffer from stress dysregulation than we did 40 years ago. Mainly through excess cortisol, a key stress hormone, this dysregulation makes the typical stress response too easy to trigger and too hard to turn off. This leaves us feeling highly agitated, even with no reason, and without effective ways to self-regulate and get back to a calmer, more functional state. In recent years, though, we've gained a much better understanding of this stress epidemic, which, it should be noted, is significantly different from clinical anxiety disorders or related diagnoses that merit consultation with a physician. We can use the knowledge learned to help protect ourselves from many of its consequences. Here's how. Build social connections. Strong social networks, especially if they include some close confidants, help us regain our emotional balance and rein in our anxiety. The psychological benefits are well known, and social networks become even more important when ambient stress increases sharply. But also, biologically, they release the good-feeling hormones serotonin and oxytocin, both of which counter cortisol. Social engagement itself also promotes the functioning of the prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain we use for regulating our emotions and making thoughtful decisions. Become mindful. We can also protect ourselves from the stress epidemic by exercising conscious mindfulness that allows us to focus on what is happening in the present moment rather than indulging in past anger or remorse or fear of the future. Practicing mindfulness on a regular basis improves the brain functions that enhance our ability to avoid excessive stress responses. This doesn't change the underlying stress physiology, but it allows us to interrupt the stress cycle by consciously controlling our reactions. This is not the same, though, as ignoring what's happening by burying our heads in the sand, taking some time away from the relentless flow of societal stressors now consistently present due to 24/7 exposure to social media and online news can help. But disappearing from the scene altogether generates additional stress. People then lack information and become concerned about what they should be doing. Retake control. A perceived lack of control is among the most debilitating factors in terms of stress biology. In the extreme, learned helplessness leaves us shattered. We can look for opportunities to expand our sense of control, both at work and in daily life, through asserting ourselves and through seeking beneficial partnerships. There are limits, though. Perceiving that we have control where the reality is the opposite is short-lived. But even planning to exercise more control and taking initial steps to enact a plan can have beneficial effects. Stay physically active. Physical activity directly reduces excess cortisol, also known as the fight-or-flight hormone, since its job is to make more energy available in stressful situations by using that energy. This works to dispel cortisol that may be lingering from problems at work or at home. It also provides a host of direct benefits to many stress-related difficulties, obesity, diabetes, metabolic disorders, but also in increased brain functioning that supports self-regulation. Avoid the alcohol and comfort food traps. Certain choices we make may reduce stress temporarily, but then have long-term negative effects on health and well-being. Comfort foods with high calories and fat do counteract cortisol, but at the risk of increasing the chances of heart diseases and other disorders. In the same way, substances like alcohol and other drugs can briefly alleviate the feelings of being overstressed and agitated, but at a risk of becoming a go-to solution that can cause serious problems down the road. Forget magic bullets. Being aware of the major stressors that are propelling the existing stress epidemic is a first step, but we all understand that no one thing solves everything here. Making use of our social connections, practicing conscious mindfulness, taking back control where we can, and staying physically active are evidence-based pathways for dealing with stress. There are no shortcuts, but persistent efforts will pay off. Why Light Roast Coffee May Be Healthier Than Dark Roast, by Amanda McMillan for Health.com. Coffee fanatics already know that their beverage of choice is rich in antioxidants, which may explain many of the health benefits associated with a regular morning joe or afternoon iced latte. But if you really want to maximize those good-for-you chemicals in every cup, a new study suggests opting for a light roast over dark. For the new study, published in the Journal of Medicinal Food, Korean researchers compared coffees of several different roasting levels, analyzing their caffeine content and levels of chlorogenic acid, a well-known antioxidant. They also exposed extract of each coffee to human cell cultures to test their antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties. The results? The lighter the roast, the higher the chlorogenic acid content, and the better the coffee extract protected human cells against oxidation, cell damage, and inflammation when tested in the lab. Caffeine levels, on the other hand, did not vary significantly between samples. These cell culture findings could potentially translate to real-life benefits, says Sampath Parasarathi, Ph.D., Interim Associate Dean at the University of Central Florida School of Medicine and Journal of Medicinal Food Editor-in-Chief, but they need to be replicated in human trials before any definitive conclusions can be formed. We know that antioxidants protect against many health problems, and we also know that inflammation is the basis of many chronic diseases, whether it's diabetes, heart disease, cancer, or neurological diseases like Alzheimer's, says Parthasarathi, who was not involved in the new study. But these diseases are progressive and occur over a long period of time, and you can't see long-term benefits in a test tube study. The study specifically looked at Arabica coffee beans roasted at levels corresponding to light, medium, city, and French roasts. The roasted beans were then ground and run through an espresso machine to obtain the extract used in testing. Partha Sarathy says it's not surprising that lighter roasts would have higher levels of antioxidant activity. When we roast something, we expose it to air, he says. There's also a time element and a temperature element involved, and all of those things contribute to oxidation. This depletes the antioxidant molecules present in the coffee grinds, he continues. They sacrifice themselves during the roasting process, he says. But ideally, we would want to preserve them as much as possible so they can have a better effect inside the body rather than getting wasted outside of it. While antioxidants aren't always anti-inflammatory, and anti-inflammatory compounds aren't always antioxidants, Partha Sarathy says the two often go hand in hand. If you love dark roasts for their flavor, Partha Sarathy says you're still likely getting some of the benefits, but cup for cup, lighter blends may have more powerful effects. Future studies may also help coffee producers make more health-focused decisions on the type of coffee and the level of roasting they choose to promote, he notes. Companies like Starbucks tout their dark French roast for its rich flavor, he says, but it may not be better for health benefits. Of course, how long coffee is roasted for is only part of the equation when it comes to maximizing its superfood potential. Partha Sarathy would also like to see more research on different types of beans grown in different regions and climates and on different brewing processes as well, like cold brew versus conventional. People drink coffee for flavor and for caffeine and for many other reasons, and many people won't even want to start their day without it, he says. Most people don't consider antioxidants or anti-inflammatory properties, but this study brings to light that the benefits of coffee, especially certain types of coffee, may be beyond what most people think. This article originally appeared on Health.com. Punches, Blood, and Drama, the women's wrestling show that inspired Netflix's Glow, by Mahita Gajanan. The new Netflix series Glow, which stars Alison Brie as a struggling actor who becomes a pro wrestling star, drew its inspiration from a real-life women's wrestling TV program that was popular in the late 1980s. In the Netflix comedy, Brie plays Ruth, an out-of-luck actor seeking the kind of meaningful roles that typically go to men. Instead, she winds up starring on a campy wrestling TV show called GLOW, which stands for Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, and is loosely based on the real 80s hit show of the same name. Ruth joins 12 other women who wear over-the-top costumes, learn to wrestle, and eventually compete on the television show. Executive produced by Orange is the New Black's Genji Kohan, the comedy, which premieres Friday, also stars Mark Maron as a B-movie director named Sam Sylvia, who's responsible for getting the women into shape. GLOW creators Liz Flahive and Carly Mensch were inspired to make the show because of their fascination with the original GLOW and its unique blend of empowerment and exploitation, Flahive recently told Vanity Fair. The show, which ran from 1986 to 1990, starred women who were themselves aspiring actors looking for a way to get on screen. They found fame by taking on flamboyant alter egos and battling each other in the ring, as the show played up exaggerated and not exactly politically correct storylines. Although Breeze Ruth and the other characters in Netflix's new show are not based on the real women who starred in the original show, some of the plot points are similar. According to a 2012 documentary that chronicles the rise and fall of the original GLOW through interviews with some of the wrestlers, the women had to learn how to wrestle before being thrown into the ring in full costume, just like the characters on the Netflix show. It was brutal work, according to the original GLOW wrestlers. Once cast, the women were brought to a grimy gym. Former wrestler Lisa Moretti says in the documentary that the gym was nasty and stinky and dirty, and the mats had blood stains on them, and each corner had a spittoon. After training, the women were given stage names and split into groups that corresponded to the nature of their characters, which drew on stereotypes to define a difference between good and bad women. The character Ninochka, for example, was a Soviet Union villain, complete with a fake Russian accent. The cast then moved to Las Vegas, where the good and bad characters lived separately. Even when they were out of the ring, the women were encouraged to stay in character. They got fined for staying out past curfew or talking to a woman from the other side. It was hard to kind of feel like you had a life, Moretti, who played Tina Ferrari in the original GLOW, says in the documentary. Show creator Matt Simber, who declined to be interviewed in the documentary, was known to be particularly harsh, often calling the women fat. Patricia King, who played the character Jailbait, recalled Simber saying to her, "Jailbait, your ass looks like a bunch of mashed potatoes." Moretti compared Simber's behavior to that of an abusive husband, but said it came with being a genius and creative as he was. Many of the women said they're now able to look back on his insults and laugh. More painful was the physical toll of wrestling. Although the storylines were produced by the show, the women did actually have to fight each other in the ring. Angelina Altitian, who played Little Egypt, tore her ACL. Laurie Thompson, who played Susie Spirits, hurt her elbow so badly the bone tore through her skin. Getting thrown around in the ring resulted in health problems that hit some of the women decades later. Emily Dole, who played the beloved Mount Fiji, struggles in the 2012 documentary with knee problems, which, combined with other health issues, had forced her into a nursing home. Wrestling is probably not the best thing for a woman's body. It doesn't mean that women can't do it and do it really well, but you're getting hit by a car every day, Moretti says. When the program was abruptly canceled in 1990 over financial issues, the women found themselves suddenly without work or a clear path forward. Post-GLOW, most of them changed careers entirely, becoming real estate agents, auto mechanics, and accountants, among other jobs. Others continued to wrestle professionally, but nothing was ever the same as GLOW. Despite the insults and injuries, the women interviewed in the documentary look back on that time as the highlight of their lives. For years, they got to wear outlandish costumes, rap on TV, show off their athleticism, and form real bonds and bruises with their colleagues. The documentary ends with a reunion where the former wrestlers see each other for the first time in about 20 years. I think of it as being one of the most exciting times of my life. A lot of fun. I wish it didn't end. I still have this dream that maybe one day, just one more time, we'll get to do it again, says Lynn Braxton, who played the character Big Bad Mama. Now, with the new GLOW on Netflix, at least they'll have the chance to watch. I Started at Zero, How a Syrian Refugee is Rebuilding His Life Through Education, by Katie Riley. When Hadi Al-Tib fled Syria to escape military service in 2016, his education was not the first thing on his mind. Al-Tib, 23, was most concerned about settling into his new life in Turkey. Once he arrived in Gaziantep, a city not far from the Syrian border, he focused on finding a job and a place to live. But as he settled into his new role managing youth development programs remotely for refugee camps and shelters in Syria, Lebanon, and Jordan, he knew he wanted to go back to school. "I was struggling to have an education," he says. "It was very hard because when I arrived in Turkey, I have nothing, nothing, nothing at all. I started at zero, maybe before zero," he told Time. "I had no place to stay, I had nothing to do, but I had a plan that I should study." Nearly 18 months after his arrival in Turkey, Al-Tib has found a way to continue his education. Like thousands of other refugees across the world, he has been taking online courses offered by universities as far-flung as Amsterdam and Baltimore through programs that offer free classes to those who are displaced from their homes. As the global refugee crisis deepens, Al-Tib is one of more than 65.6 million people forcibly displaced worldwide, according to the UN Refugee Agency. Many experts have called for a long-term approach to providing refugees with an education. That's especially important for refugees from countries like Syria, who may not be able to return home and resume their studies anytime soon. The idea of education has had to shift from kind of filling a gap for a few years until someone might return home to really providing a whole course of education, said Sarah Dryden-Peterson, an associate professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education who studies refugee education. According to UNICEF statistics, only half of child refugees are enrolled in primary school, and less than a quarter are enrolled in secondary school. And an educational gap remains for older, job-seeking refugees as well. Because refugee young people have this very deep uncertainty about where their future will be, they need credentials that will allow them to bring their skills and create their livelihoods in multiple places, Dryden-Peterson said. In Syria, Altib had studied dentistry and graduated from Damascus University in 2015 before deciding that he was more interested in social work. "I discovered that I want to do something with people, not with teeth," he said. In the past year, he has completed courses in budgeting, basic statistics, and psychological first aid through Coursera for Refugees, earning a set of skills that he said gave him more credibility in his job. He is also working toward a bachelor's degree, accessing university courses through Chiron Open Higher Education. His long-term goal is to return to Syria. "My vision is to link and to help Syrian youth to lead the process of peace building after the war," he said. "I want to continue working in Syria and rebuilding what is broken in Syria. I don't want to be out of Syria." World Refugee Day on Tuesday marks 1 year since the launch for Coursera for Refugees, an extension of Coursera's online college class portal that's aimed at helping refugees acquire career-oriented skills. More than 5,000 refugees have used the program, whose most popular courses include computer programming offered by Duke and the University of Michigan, and advanced writing at the University of California, Irvine, and Wesleyan's How to Change the World. Dryden-Peterson said more and more companies, startups, and NGOs are starting to look at what they can bring to the table when it comes to addressing the refugee crisis. But she said there are few programs and institutions that offer refugees the opportunity to earn a full academic degree. Most, like Coursera, simply allow refugees to complete individual classes. These piecemeal credits are incredibly valuable in providing a refugee with the opportunity to engage in the kind of learning they're seeking, Dryden-Peterson says. But equally important is the full degree that can signify they've reached that benchmark. What all 50 states are hungry for on Pinterest. While nothing beats a good cookbook, more and more home cooks are turning to Pinterest to collect and discover recipes. But tastes and trends can take on a certain regionality, which is why Pinterest has released its Food-Nited States of America list, featuring the recipes and ingredients that rank higher in a certain state than they do anywhere else. Compared to the other 49, each state has a keen interest in one particular product or dish that sets them apart. Here's a look at what your friends, neighbors, and fellow Americans are pinning and prepping. Alabama, pound cake. Alaska, survival food. Arizona, chiles. Arkansas, Coca-Cola. California, figs. Colorado, carnitas. Connecticut, cannoli. Delaware, crabs. Florida, cake toppers. Georgia, wing recipes. Hawaii, matcha. Idaho, canning. Illinois, wild rice soup. Indiana, noodle casserole. Iowa, Chex Mix. Kansas, chicken enchiladas. Kentucky, peanut butter fudge. Louisiana, shrimp pasta. Maine, donuts. Maryland, scallops. Massachusetts, butternut squash. Michigan, no-bake cookies. Minnesota, broccoli salad. Mississippi, chicken spaghetti. Missouri, cheesecake dip. Montana, scones. Nebraska, sloppy joes. Nevada, cake pops. New Hampshire, martinis. New Jersey, sangria. New Mexico, empanadas. New York, falafel. North Carolina, banana pudding. North Dakota oatmeal bars, Ohio peanut butter brownies, Oklahoma taco soup, Oregon curry, Pennsylvania peach schnapps, Rhode Island flour cupcakes, South Carolina red velvet cupcakes, South Dakota tater tots, Tennessee cornbread, Texas stuffed avocado, Utah coconut chicken, Vermont beets, Virginia smoothie bowls, Washington Thai chicken, West Virginia pumpkin desserts, Wisconsin puppy chow, Wyoming energy bite. Facebook is telling your friends where you are at all times. Here's How to Stop It by Eric Jenkins. Snapchat made headlines earlier this week with the introduction of Snap Map, a new feature that allows users to see their friends' location on a map. Some were quick to point out that the function can jeopardize Snapchat users' privacy. Facebook implemented a similar measure years ago in 2014. Facebook's feature is called Nearby Friends and works similarly with the exception of a map. The social network's mobile app will show you the precise neighborhood your Facebook friends are located in when nearby, as well as display the location of friends who are currently traveling. If you'd like to turn off this feature to maintain privacy, here's how to do it. Open the Facebook app on your Android or iOS phone and click on the menu button in the lower right-hand corner of the screen. A menu full of shortcuts and settings will appear. Under the Explore tab, select Nearby Friends. The feature may already be disabled if you never gave the app permission to use it in the first place. In this case, you're all set. But if not, you'll see a screen detailing nearby friends, friends traveling, and other locations depending on your network, such as previous places you've lived or traveled to frequently. Select the gear button in the top right-hand corner of the screen to open the feature settings. Simply tap the Nearby Friends buttons at the very top to disable the function. If you'd like to keep it active for certain groups like your family or friends who specifically live in your area, you can select the Friends option right underneath and adjust who can see your location. If you do opt to allow some or all of your friends to view your location, keep in mind that the service will drain your phone's battery while it's on, but only about 0.3 to 0.4% per hour, according to Facebook. The World's Ugliest Dog Has Just Been Named by Lisa Marie Segarra. The title for the world's ugliest dog in 2017 went to a Neapolitan Mastiff on Friday. The three-year-old dog, known as Martha, is described as 125 pounds of drooling, snoring, gassy, loud, and silly girl, according to her short biography on the contest website. Martha was brought to a California rescue group with chronic pain and nearly blind. Her eyesight has since improved after having surgery. Martha's family received $1,500, a trophy, and a trip to New York for media appearances. The World's Ugliest Dog competition is part of the Sonoma Marin Fair in Petaluma, California, and features adoptable and previously adopted dogs that are judged based on appearance and personality. We're proud to celebrate all dogs and pets by showing that no matter their imperfections, they are adoptable, lovable, and a great addition to any family, Aaron Post, CEO of the Sonoma Marin Fair, said in a statement on the competition website. Mo, a 16-year-old Brussels Griffin pug mix and the oldest dog in the competition, came in second, the Associated Press reported. Chase, a 14-year-old Chinese crested Harkey mix, took third place. Thanks for joining us. I'm Harvey Kojan, and you've been listening to the daily edition of Times the Brief. To get this sent to your inbox every morning, go to time.com/thebrief. You can also subscribe through iTunes or your favorite podcast app. I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, enjoy the day.